it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin. You got, oh, man, Corey Majors.
Oh, man.
And, of course, the famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. How we doing today?
We are doing great. We are going to be, I'm establishing this right now, Alec. Micah-free masterpiece, all right?
Oh.
We will be the only show with the balls to not talk about Micah Parsons, all right?
Oh.
The only show on this station. Sean can sit there and cover it all he wants, but here we are not covering Micah Parsons. First topic, Micah Parsons yesterday.
What the hell? You just said we weren't going to do that.
We are free from Micah. That's what I meant by Micah-free, Kevin. He is free now. We are free from him, so that's what I meant by that. We're going to cover it, though, probably.
Okay, probably.
I think the most important thing is I'll talk about it until I don't care about it anymore, and then when I don't care about it anymore, I'll keep an eye on things, and occasionally something will pop up, and I'm sure people will tweet us little things like, oh, did you see what Micah did? And I'll be like, no, I didn't care. But I'll probably care about it for just a little bit this season, probably until the Packers game. And then after that, we'll see if he's on his way to a Super Bowl. Then we'll be like, oh my gosh, can you believe it? Congratulations to him.
I kind of hope along the way more people say, I don't really agree with your coverage strategy as opposed to this is the most insane outrage in the history of media, both one way or another. All right.
I'm back on, by the way, I'm back on the fan text today.
Okay, yes.
Good luck, fan text.
So it was going to be a combination topic to start things off, and part of it was going to be what was the most surprising or interesting result of the NFL's opening weekend. I feel like the Sunday night game took care of that and said, no, you will only discuss our game to start. But you know what? There's another thing we're going to start with, too, because it's the Texas Rangers and not the Texas Astros, and that's a scientific fact. Go ahead and give me cut number one, if you will, because we did it.
2-2. Swing a ground ball, first base side, pass Walker down the line. Freeman rounds third, he comes home. Hop on the D train. The Rangers walk it off. 4-3 the final.
So the Texas Rangers win the series over the Astros, and I know a lot of people are primed to talk NFL, and we definitely will, but we need to talk about, we said going in on Friday, biggest series of the season so far, and man, did Sunday feel like an important, important game. After the walk-off Friday, getting crushed on Saturday, taking the series on Sunday felt, I don't know if it was a must-win because math will say it was not, but it felt pretty darn close to a must-win.
It is the most local thing that happened this weekend because the Cowboys game happened on Thursday. So this is the most local thing that happened. And Kevin, who predicted that the Rangers would take 2 of 3 this weekend?
You did.
Yeah, that's true.
I also think Alec did too.
I also, you know what? That's what I was saying. Both of us, except for Kevin. Kevin said 1 of 3, and that was interesting.
I don't believe I made
Kevin
it.
Said sweep, and he just happened. Unfortunately, he was wrong. I figured though that the Merrill Kelly start would be a better one. And the Jacob DeGrom would be, those were the two I was expecting. Patrick Corbin gave you some good outing there, and you were able to get the win. Dude, I contend this still. It feels further away from being in the playoffs when you're 1.5 games out than it does when you're 9. Because it feels like the Rangers are like, we're 9 games out. Let's make that up just like that. And whenever they're 1.5 games out, they're like, oh, just can't win that 1.5 games that we need. So it just feels like you're still so far away. And you could go either direction with this thing. But it just feels like 1.5 games is not closer than 9 for this team.
Huh.
People know what I'm saying. Y'all know what 877-881-1053. Roll it out there.
What a confusing yet intriguing hypothesis to begin the show. Now,
is that what you say about Corey frequently?
Yes. Look, the beauty of Corey is he confuses you yet enthralls you at the same time. At least I found that to be the case.
I'm dumbfounded.
See, Boach knows. This is the first home series that the Rangers have won over the Astros in more than 4 years.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah. So All right. I think you had a split or two along the way. And from the 817, is there a chance Seager will be back for the last Astros series? We don't really have a definitive timeline, although I know Corey Seager did say he would like to be back before the end of the regular season. Now, does that mean like against Cleveland? That feels significantly more likely Minnesota or Cleveland than the next Astros series. But I don't know that for a scientific fact.
Okay.
Unlike it's the Texas Rangers.
It is the Texas Rangers.
And not the Texas Astros. From the 214, I think I was having a stroke trying to understand what Corey was saying.
Mm-hmm.
As the resident Tolo mathematician, I have to disagree with you. And that's why I think Corey...
Hold on. 817. Exactly. So close, yet so far away. It's much more frustrating. And from the 817, Bill Majors, the science guy, Bill.
See, and from the 682, Corey's logic makes no but perfect sense. And that's, I think you covered yourself well when you said feels like.
It feels like.
Yeah.
Because you can't, yeah, science doesn't go on feel, all right? Science goes on facts.
Uh-huh.
You get, actually.
Sometimes.
Science starts with feel, all right? What is a hypothesis? It's an educated guess. That's kind of a feel. I think this. And then you go pursue the facts that follow up. Mm-hmm. That's how science works. Mm-hmm. It's called a scientific method.
Man, you really lucked out finishing that sentence. So the Rangers have 18 games to go. They win the series. They continue to make up ground in the West where they're only 4 games back. And then in the wild card, as Corey said, it is a daunting 1.5 games.
It's so, don't we feel like we've been at 1.5 games for 6 months now?
It'd be better off if we were the Orioles, 9 games.
We'd drop down to 7, and we'd be like, no, we'll get it back real quick. And then we're at 1.5. We just can't get over that hump. That's where it is. We're stuck at the hump.
From the 214. All right, Corey, then do you think it's more likely to win the AL West than take that wild card spot? That's a good question based on your hypothesis.
Only math can tell the answer to that question.
Okay. From the 469. Yeah, you've been at 1.5 games back. All right. Yes, well,
exactly.
The hell with
go,
me.
Go look and see how long we've been at 1.5 games and how long we've been at 7. All right. Mm-hmm. Figure that out real quick for me.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll dive into that probably at no point the show today.
Fact is, I like beating the Astros. That feels hell good. Yeah. And that's what it's all about, baby. And we get one more chance to do that. And also, Seattle has from what I see, it looks like a tougher stretch for their schedule down the road here. Maybe I'm a little bit wrong about that, but it just looks like they have teams slated that put the Rangers in really good position to take that 1.5 games back from them.
Now, to go along with that, the other part of this segment was going to be what was the most surprising or interesting result of the NFL's opening weekend. Alec, correct me if I'm wrong. Do you think it's fair that that's morphed into, hey, how the hell did the Ravens lose that game?
Yeah, and the first thing I see whenever I turn my head and look at the TV is First Take debating if the Ravens should have any reason for their fans to believe that they can win any kind of close games. And that's got to be the conversation. There's some wild Harbaugh stats floating around there now in terms of some big leads that he's given up. So, yeah, that game was pure madness and the exact reason why we stay up for primetime games.
I loved that game. I loved it so much. It was two highly competitive quarterbacks that were going at it.
And they both played excellently.
Yes. Yeah, and like that's what you kind of look and you go, hey, Dak had 188 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Dak had a good game. You know, if you watch the game, you went, Dak had a good game. And then you watch them and you see the numbers they put out and you're like, holy crap, those are excellent quarterbacks. Like, that's what excellent quarterbacks do. And it looked like they were playing in playoff mode to start the game. Like, they looked like they were ready to play a playoff game. And both defenses were, I know the numbers 40 don't make it look very good, but both defenses fought their asses off last night. I enjoyed that game thoroughly last night. And I knew going into it, I was like, I expect to get a good one, but it's the beginning of the season. You're going to have some rust to get over. They didn't look like they had too much rust. Maybe some of the defenses did.
See, it's a bizarre thing. We talked about this with the Cowboys opener on Thursday. When the same player that it feels like might have broken the game back open ends up potentially losing it for you in Miles Sanders.
Right, yeah.
Like, I know it's more complicated than all that. But yesterday, same exact thing, right? It felt like Derrick Henry just takes off. This game is over. I realize there was still a decent amount of time in the game, and especially after that, you follow up and you force Buffalo to punt again. But Derrick Henry looks like he put the game away. And just when you're thinking it's donezo, and then
they pull you back in.
Yes, and then Derrick Henry is the one with the fumble, and he just cannot get over it. And I think it was Mike Tirico who was like, you know, Baltimore's got to be irritated because they just can't put Buffalo away. And I remember when he said that, I'm watching the game and I was like, yeah, that's a good point. But you know what? They're going to win. Like, I really was sitting there thinking, like, obviously they're still going to win, but I get his point.
Absolutely. You should think that, Kevin, because the stat that goes along with that, before that loss last night, NFL teams that had scored at least 40 points and rushed for 235 plus yards were 277-0 in the regular season and playoffs.
Wow.
Until the Ravens made history last night. So, yes, you absolutely should have thought they would win because everybody before them had won 277 times prior.
Whoo! Does that make you think like the 214 John Harbaugh is the Doc Rivers of the NFL? One championship and a bunch of blown leads.
Well, I mean,
man.
Well, because I was going to say, I was like thinking Tomlin. There's a lot of other guys that have one championship as head coaches in the NFL. Like, there are very few that have multiples. But the ones that have one, Mike Tomlin, Mike McCarthy, they all have kind of similar things where things went really good one year and then they were pretty good coaches the rest of the time, but just not good enough.
Now, even after the fumble, Baltimore is able to break up the two-point conversion. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, looks like they'll survive nonetheless. But alas,
just got to get a first down.
We move forward. Go ahead and give me cut number 11, but I also want to ask this question. I know they know what they're doing, but did you get a little nervous that Buffalo was going to screw around just a little bit and not get that field goal off in the proper amount of time? But instead, it went down like this. Cut 11. And that was a stunning comeback win, but it feels like there was something more important that we reached with that win. And once again, I'm going to throw it over to Mike Tirico, cut number 14. He knows what the people care about.
And 1-2 in the MVP voting, it's one of those games you feel like the guy who's got the ball last wins, and they weren't going to let Lamar Jackson get it, and Josh Allen held on to it. And if you've never seen a game like that before, you're right. That's the first 41-40 final score in the 106-year history of the National
Football
League.
Well, of course it is.
Of course it is, right?
Absolutely, yes.
For all of you Scoregami fans, there is one.
Scoregami! For the 1,092nd time in the history of the NFL, that is a unique final score, 41-40. So this game had it all, including Scoregami, including Mike Tirico mentioning Scoregami.
Thank you, Mike Tirico, for mentioning something the KNC Masterpiece created.
We did not invent this.
Thank you, Lucy.
No, Lucy, that is fake breaking news. Yeah, don't associate
yourself. Yeah, it wasn't breaking news.
We
talked about that for a long time.
Oh my gosh. I appreciate everyone who thinks we invented Scoregami. We did not, but I appreciate the faith nonetheless. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we will talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnola, right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, brought to you by Ford and your North Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. It is our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnola. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen. How's it going?
Well, it's going better than it is probably for the Ravens this morning, huh?
Oh, God.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's tough. That's a tough loss right there.
Boy, that's hard to give up that many points in the fourth quarter. And not just points, but how about yards?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I think Josh Allen's stats just in the fourth quarter would have been a game.
Yes.
For most people, right?
It's unbelievable. It really. Do you think that was a bigger triumph than his wife's box office hit Sinners? Or was last night the bigger triumph?
I think last night.
Okay, the Sinners is a really good movie.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm going to have to check it out.
Yeah, it was good, man.
All right, now, were there any other... I know, obviously, the Cowboys played on Thursday. Were there any other games, I'm assuming Green Bay and the Lions, for a multitude of reasons, that really had your attention yesterday?
Yeah, that one, and then Washington and the Giants, since they're playing the Giants this coming Sunday. Washington, you know, that was weird. I mean, maybe the Giants defense is pretty good.
Yeah.
I think it just seemed everything, you know, the Giants were doing, they just couldn't score points.
Right.
That was their MO last year too.
But that was it, right? And a lot of it had to do with the offensive line. I thought they improved it. It sure didn't look like it. And Russell Wilson didn't look like he was seeing the field very well either. I mean, he was pulling it down and running at the, you know, first sign of trouble.
Can you convince Dable to keep him as the quarterback for at least one more week?
I saw that came up after the game, right?
And you kind of thought he'd be like, that's 1 week. We're sticking with the plan, but he didn't.
He gave you the, well, we got to go back and look at film and see and, you know, and analyze. And it's like, okay, that's a non-answer.
Well, and from your history covering the team or just in sports in general, do you feel like you kind of have to roll out like two versions of a game plan then just in case they do switch quarterbacks?
Yeah, but I would imagine... you know, by Thursday, you're kind of going to know.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you can, you know, kind of change. But, you know, that was the Russell Wilson I think I'd been seeing, though. He doesn't hang in the pocket very long. He takes off, right?
Yeah.
Which I think you'd rather him doing that than standing there throwing the football.
I would be inclined to agree with that.
I thought Washington's defense looked really, really, you know, they played well, especially near the goal line, right? And offensively, it just seemed like they were moving the ball left and right, and they should have scored more than, what did they get, 20, was it 23?
21.
21? That was weird. Yeah, I think, you know, that defense looks really good. But again, it's the same thing the Cowboys faced on Thursday night. If you can stop the quarterback from running, you got a half a chance to shut down that offense.
If you could pick any player from the Giants to spit on a Cowboys player to start the game and get ejected, who would you pick?
Abdul Carter.
Oh, yeah, and they lined Abdul Carter up a lot in the middle. I saw the versatility that they were using for him.
I mean, they were kind of using him like Cowboys used Micah Parsons, right?
Yes.
Just moving him. And you know, he kind of looks like kind of the same player. I also heard he was a handful at Penn State also. But don't worry about that, right? As long as you can sack the quarterback or whatever, then you're good. I spent a lot of time watching a lot of games, I guess.
Did you find yourself, like, obviously Green Bay and Detroit was an important game.
Yeah.
It would appear likely in the hierarchy of the NFC, but did you find yourself more specifically kind of zeroing in on the plays where Micah was out there and what he was doing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. and you couldn't help it because they'd identify. Usually they don't identify everybody that's on the line, right? But every time he was out there, they identified him being out there.
Sure.
And I don't know if it was all 30 snaps that he took or whatever. Yeah, that back was bothering him, wasn't it?
Yes.
What a bunch of BS, right? God. The way he was running when he finally got his sack, it was like, yeah, that back hurts. Give me a break. It was a terrible excuse. I thought Green Bay, nice job. But again, Detroit just looked out of sync on offense, didn't they?
Yeah, it's like losing Ben Johnson was a problem.
Was it, you think that was it? Or
man, it really... Like,
I also think that not having Ragnow there in the middle, like that changes things too. They're... Like you could usually run right. Jahmyr Gibbs ran right behind him a lot.
Yeah,
and that interior offensive line for Detroit just didn't look the same yesterday.
Well, I'll tell you who was not impressive at all. I mean, I remember all this talk about Penny Sewell going into that draft, right? It wasn't Micah Parsons giving him problems. Everybody was giving him problems out there at right tackle.
Which is odd because he's been a really fantastic NFL player.
Yeah, that's what I was expecting to see, right? I didn't see it. He looks slow on, trying to stop pass rushes, or maybe it was just Micah because he's awfully good at doing that. That was a neat atmosphere for that game, obviously. But it's Green Bay, right? And it's Buffalo, which, by the way, although their fans sure aren't that tough, right? They bailed.
So I thought, I don't know what the actual number was, but I chuckled out loud when Chris Collinsworth was like, there's probably about 25,000 Buffalo fans trying to get back in the
right.
stadium.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They should recharge them whenever they're trying to re-enter on
that. You don't get to come back in, right?
They got
to
show their hand stamp or whatever. I thought it was a phenomenally entertaining weekend of NFL football. So any other games, or honestly, what I really want to know, any other people that you want to take down? Because you've been on fire this morning, mm-hmm, Mickey.
Mm-hmm. What do I don't take down?
Yeah. Micah, Penei Sewell. Who else do we need to take down?
A throat slam around here.
Well, you know what? Do you watch the runs that Derrick Henry makes?
Of course.
Yes.
Do you see the holes that he has?
Mm-hmm. That helps a lot.
I mean, there was a couple runs and, great runs, but, we could have run through those holes. There were holes that he didn't have to run anybody over, right? He was untouched.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how does that happen?
Blocking up front.
I guess, right? Well-designed plays. Yeah. I mean, I know he's got to see the hole and make the cut, but to go 30 or 40 yards untouched, it's amazing, and I thought that last year too when I watched them play, and I know all the yards he ran for and everything, but he doesn't get touched sometimes, right? And then when he gets touched, it's 3 yards, right?
Yeah.
And maybe he's gonna learn to stop the stiff arm thing and hold on to the football.
I do remember Jerry too. He mentioned this, I don't know if it was us, a couple different times, but he did throw out the line of, look, I'm not sure that he would get those yards with this team, this offense. He was saying, our offensive line isn't that good right now.
Well, and it was awfully young last year,
exactly,
right? You're starting two rookies.
Yeah, and that was one of those lines that just really stuck with me, and I was like, I felt like that was a concession by Jerry to say, I know we're not quite there right now with this group.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't see holes like that, repeatedly around here. But that made an impression on me. I know he's good and all that, but
you better quit
sometimes playing bully ball when you're trying to protect the lead, right?
Are there any other former or current all pros that you would like to break down in this moment? Because I am thoroughly enjoying this.
Thoughts on Reggie White.
See.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. he was awfully good, by the way.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure.
Until Eric Williams got in his head.
Oh, man.
There you go.
I mean, they showed a little bit of that in one of the episodes, maybe, on the documentary.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, he would have that big move where he just, you know, side clock somebody and throw them to the ground, and then all of a sudden Eric Williams started playing offense the way Charles Haley played defense. Like, I'll do anything I have to do to block you.
Yes,
right? And yeah. I think that scares opposing players when you got to play against them.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So yeah, I watched a lot of college football, NFL football.
Did.
U.S. Open tennis.
Okay,
I had all the TVs going.
Hold on, then. I got another question about an All-Pro. We'll see if he's any good.
Right.
Did you appreciate, both verbally and going back out there, how CeeDee Lamb has kind of, like, followed up with all of the drops? Because, like, from what he said, he was out there in front of it talking about how he's got to play better. And then I know you have some in-house optional work, and then he was out there at the facility working on the jugs machine. Did you appreciate, both physically and mentally, how he's, like, you know, tried to turn the page?
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that I think that showed you his level of frustration when I saw him walking out on the field and he had his helmet in his hand. And it's like, well, where's he going? There's no one out here. There's nothing. Well, one of the, I guess, equipment guys and one of the assistants or whatever goes into the little area over there and pulls out the jugs machine, and he put his helmet on, and in almost a half hour he stood there catching balls from about 10, 15 yards away, and for a long time with his helmet on, okay?
Right.
And it's like, okay, all right, you know, he thinks he needs to work. Now, coming from the jugs machine and coming across the field trying to reach up and knowing you're going to get hit once you catch that ball is a different story, but at least he was like, okay, I got to do something about this. And maybe it was just to, you know, alleviate the frustration.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
He had after the couple drops that he you know, normally makes, let's put it that way. So, yeah, that was good on his part. And now just catch the darn ball, right?
You could say damn. It's
okay.
Okay,
I almost did. I
caught
myself. I
appreciate it nonetheless.
Yeah. Yeah. I kept it clean. It's Monday, right?
It is Monday morning.
And it's a regular Monday.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, how about that?
Yeah.
Well, an early press conference.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, if you could give him a heads up to try to keep it to like 10 minutes, because we have Stephen Jones at noon, and I would really appreciate it if he could wrap it up quickly.
Well, I have double invested in that because my podcast starts at noon also.
See? There you go.
All right. Well,
let's get this rolling.
I can handle it to 11:59 and still make it by noon, right?
Oh, that's a good point. All right, I'm going to see if I can.
But I'll see if I can help you guys.
Let's wrap
out.
This thing up around 11:54.
Yeah, if you
like
could just ask a question and start it by saying last question, like, just to see if everyone will fall in line, that would be
that would be
really awesome.
Hey, before we let you go.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much, Mick. We'll catch up with you again tomorrow.
I'll be here. See
you. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Mickey Spagnuolo right here on 105 Through the Fan. Man! Some of those all pros getting toasted by Mickey this morning.
Burn the bridges, man.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, we're switching things around. It's time for Gridiron Gravy. Is this the beginning of the Aaron Rodgers revenge tour? Next right here in the Fan.
Rodgers under center. Play action pass. Rolling to his right. Fires off the back foot. Calvin Austin. Touchdown, Pittsburgh Steelers. The play-action pass, he gets Austin in the right portion of the end zone for the touchdown pass, fourth of the day for Aaron Rodgers.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, it's time to go around the entire NFL and dip into some gridiron gravy.
Dip it and rip it.
Now, we got Shoddy's Presser coming up at 11:40, and it is the day after an NFL Sunday, so we're kind of switching things up for the day. Aaron Rodgers. Man, I get it. And at many times, I also do not care for Aaron Rodgers, but he's always good for a soundbite. After they were victorious 34-32, I was happy to beat everybody associated with the Jets, is what Aaron Rodgers said in his post-game presser.
I heard him. I heard him say, you know, it was nice to be able to prove to everybody. A lot of people in that that building thought I couldn't play anymore, and it was nice to be able to prove to them that I could.
It feels so much more to the bone when you're like, I was happy to beat everybody.
All of you.
Yeah, Janet in accounting, you too. I'm glad that I defeated you.
He made some really good throws.
He did.
He kept that offense on time. Fortunately, that's a well-constructed offense, too. I expected a little more out of his connection with DK Metcalf, but Kevin...
Actually, we'll get to that. Yeah.
I shouldn't just expect anything from DK Metcalf. Like, that's history should have taught me what to expect from him. But the one thing that Aaron Rodgers... I don't know if this is going to be helpful to him in this pursuit. He has a decent defense. He has a decent offense surrounding him. But he can't escape the pocket like he used to. That's the one thing that was very, you could see it all over that game. And that's something that for his entire career, he's always had that ability to get out of the pocket and get away and irritate the crap out of you by picking up 12 yards when he needed 7 on a third down. And so I just wonder if that's going to be something that keeps him from, you know, this last thing that he wants to do in his career. Or if because of what the team is, they're constructed enough that all he has to do is stay in the pocket and let it go.
I mean, I thought both of the quarterbacks played really well.
Justin Fields played a really good game, man.
But specifically, you mentioned DK Metcalf. Props to Sauce Gardner. He lined up across from DK Metcalf on 30 of his 33 routes. He allowed one catch for 11 yards on 3 targets. So, first of all, when Sauce was lined up with DK, they didn't really go to him. And then when they did, it didn't go anywhere. Metcalf recorded 4 receptions for 83 yards on 7 targets the rest of the time. And he averaged just 3.2 air yards per target, the lowest in a game in his career. So Sauce Gardner getting some work done. Aaron Rodgers has 28 career games now with at least 4 touchdown passes and no interceptions. That's tied with Tom Brady for the most in NFL history. And then we talked about Justin Fields. Justin Fields, 16 of 22, 218 yards and a touchdown. But he also ran the ball for 2 more touchdowns. So really pretty efficient offense across the board.
Yeah, Breece Hall had a really good game too. 107 yards on the ground, 38 receiving. And a lot of people thought Breece Hall's time was done.
Yes.
You know, they were like, oh, it's over. Or, I'm sorry, hold on. Yeah, no, it was Braylon Allen's that next dude. Breece Hall was always the guy that was like, I'm that dude. Just watch. And when he gets the ball, he's fun to watch, man.
By the way, Cam Hayward did agree to a revised deal with the Steelers before that game went down. He got his salary up to $18 million in 2025. That's an increase from $14.75 million that he was due. So he's happy. The team is happy. And I kind of imagine maybe the Jets aren't totally furious this morning, but perhaps Jets fans are. Let's go from that to, I know this is going to shock you, but George Kittle had an injury issue and he missed the remainder of the 49ers-Seahawks game, which they miraculously somehow won, with a hamstring injury.
I have no clue how San Francisco won this game. With everything that was problematic for them in this game, other than they were like, everybody said, hey, let's not cover Ricky Pearsall. Like, let's just not deal with, let's leave him alone. And then the potentially the fact that Sam Darnold's the starting quarterback of the Seahawks. Like, that makes sense, too.
You got to see the magicalness and terribleness of Brock Purdy all wrapped into one as well.
I mean, Christian McCaffrey might not start right up until the last minute of the game. And you're kind of, you got all these question marks. Jackson Smith and Jigba had a really good game, though. I mean, it was kind of necessary for him, but he had a pretty good game.
You know, I think I'm going to give my shout-out to certainly one of the players of the weekend. I realize Josh Allen is in that conversation, of course. Puka Nacua. Puka Nacua was evaluated for a concussion, but in that same game, when he came back for the game, he had 10 catches on 11 targets.
Yeah, big and yards, too.
130 yards. So, yeah. 10 catches on 11 targets for 130 yards after he bounced back from being in concussion protocol, or not concussion protocol, but being examined for a concussion during the game.
Rams are going to be a tough team to beat. I am absolutely befuddled at the offense of the Houston Texans. It does not make sense how far they've fallen off since CJ Stroud's rookie year.
Right.
I don't know what's going on there anymore. But they just cannot get anything going at all. But congratulations to Matt Stafford on having another season-opening victory.
And it's, you know what, he also got to 60,000 yards, and we could talk about that for his career. We could talk about that more if you like, but we will talk at some point this week about it's only one game, and you have to be careful about overreacting too much to one game. But early reports on that newfangled offensive line, big fat thumbs
it's not
down.
Working for him right now. They got to figure that out. Otherwise, this team is going nowhere.
Yeah. So Matthew Stafford tied Matt Ryan as the second fastest player to reach 60,000 yards. Drew Brees holds that record for fastest player to get to 60,000 yards based on the number of games started.
Oh, congratulations to them.
Matthew Stafford is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Yes,
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's put up the stats. He has the Super Bowl to go along with it. I think he'd. Like, he was in Detroit where it was just miserable forever, and he's been a contender almost every year with the Rams.
Did you feel that, like, that Super Bowl justified everything that had happened before him?
No, but it was the next step for him. Like, if you're saying justified having to live his life in Detroit and experience that whole thing, yes.
And, like, listen to people go, you're all stats and no.
Yeah, no, he was a lot of stats, and he couldn't control all the other messes that happened in Detroit while he was there.
Now, we're going to play cut number 12, and it might be jarring for some people to listen to, but we're going to listen to this, and I want you to hear the Cam Bynum reaction to his celebration. You're going to hear, I believe, a good 4 to 5 seconds of silence as the announcers try to figure out how they're going to describe his, like, butt jump wiggle across the field. Take it away, Cam.
And it's a takeaway for the Colts defense.
Andrew, I wish I could tell you what that dance is, but I am not familiar with that at all.
The jiggle.
You need to see it because he starts by laying on the ground, and I can't tell if people said this became popular on TikTok or it was popular on TikTok, and that's why he did it. As y'all are my TikTok experts, he pretended like his hamstring was hurt, and then he is, like, wriggling kind of like a fish across the end zone.
Yeah, that's the I've seen many, many people do this.
Okay, so it was popular on TikTok, and so he emulated.
Yeah, and that's always fun to emulate TikTok.
Okay, I think probably for legal purposes we should say it is not always fun to emulate TikTok, right? Just in case.
Yep.
Thank you. I did not think that would
be. For legal purposes.
I did not think that would be as much of a struggle as it turned out to be. Let's go to the Raiders. The Raiders are victorious 20-13 over the Patriots, and that's all fine and well. But also, Pete Carroll became officially the oldest head coach in NFL history. He will turn 74 next week.
Oof,
and I know
that's old.
You mentioned, not to say that the Raiders are going to dominate, but you think Pete Carroll is a legitimate coach of the year candidate.
I do. Yeah, and I'm very interested to see how that division goes, too, because the way this thing started off with Kansas City losing to the Chargers, Denver getting their game, the Raiders winning here, this is now a very interesting division. It's been an interesting division for the last few years because everybody was chasing down Mahomes and the Chiefs. Well, now it looks like things have kind of leveled off and they're a very competitive and strong team or division overall.
Let's go to cut number 6, and Younghoe Koo has really struggled since the start of last year. He is 29th out of 31 kickers in terms of field goal percentage. With that in mind and the opportunity to tie the game, try to act surprised when you hear what happens.
Koo from 44, it is wide to the right, no good!
And that secured the victory for the Bucs over the Falcons. And it was an interesting day just in general, but for Bijan Robinson, who had two early catches, including, what was the nickname? Because I thought it was
Bijan Robinson. Because yes, you said he's going to be a beast this year, and he had a beast play to start the game.
It almost felt like his statistics were inverted. If I told you he had 100 yards rushing and then 24 yards receiving, you'd be like, I could probably see that. But instead, 12 for 24 on the ground. He had that huge early touchdown that went, I think, for 50 yards.
Yeah, he had a 50-yard receiving touchdown. He, that was the thing we were talking about Friday when you were doing, we were having that conversation. You said he's going to be a beast this year over reaction reality. And I was like, no, he absolutely can be because he's a receiver as much as he is a running back out of the backfield. But Terry Algier just gets in the way sometimes of some of those rushing touchdowns. But yeah, man, he is the guy that they can turn everything to. Good game for Michael Penix. Nice outing for him to start that and get that rolling. Baker Mayfield made a beautiful throw to Buka
He had a couple of touchdowns.
That was it wasn't the most exciting game, but the way that it all summed up, you were like, man, that was a fun game to watch.
All right. Coming up next, because we still have more football, we could talk about the best offensive performance of the weekend, maybe the worst, and Cowboys questions that matter following the opener. Still a lot more coming at you next right here on The Fan.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.